Welcome to Surfcast. I'm glad to join us again today. My guest is Bruce Dill, the founder and CEO of City of Refuge, an LA Times bestseller, author of Trust First with Sarah Grace, and senior pastor of the Mission Church in Atlanta, Georgia. This is not a typical church, but rather a one-stop shop for transformation of the broken and the hurting. When Bruce Dill and his wife Rhonda, along with their daughters, moved into the inner city of Atlanta in 1997, they were armed with the conviction that these people could have a better life. Bruce knew that the first thing he had to do was trust them. Stick around. You don't want to miss this conversation with Lee Alum and my friend, Bruce Dill. We'll be right back. Bruce, welcome back to Lee University campus. Welcome to Servcast. I'm glad you joined me today, man. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's always an honor to be here. I was thinking this morning, it's been 36 years since I left Lee in 1983.
Wow.
Been back a bunch of times. It's changed a lot, but it's always good to be here. Thank you, William, for your opportunity.
Yeah, and you got a string of kids that have just been coming here over the years, and now your youngest is here with us.
Yeah,
Carly was a student of mine at Summer Honors.
That's right. Yeah, we've had four graduate, and our youngest is here now. She loved your class, and Summer Honors was great. She settled in here this fall and doing a great job.
Yeah. So, City of Refuge down in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, there are other City of Refuges as well, right? Are they all connected with what you're doing? Or
yeah, we have a number of affiliates around the country.
Okay.
So they're their own nonprofit, but they use our best practices, our brand standards. And so we've got five in Georgia, three in Virginia, we're in Chicago, Baltimore, opening in Dallas this year.
Good deal. Well, let's dig into this conversation. And what I want to do is I want to kind of tap back to, I guess, what, 22 years ago now. Or something like that. You know, I mentioned in the introduction that this line, I love the line, it's from the front cover of your book, Trust First, and it's a great line. You were armed with the conviction that these people could have a better life. Who are these people? There's like, you know, we know that there's a hashtag, we are COR, and there's like a zip code, you know, but who are these people? What, paint us a picture of, you know, west side of Atlanta when you guys are making a difference.
You know, 30314 is our zip code, and highest crime rate per capita in the state of Georgia, highest homeless population, highest number of HIV positive cases, more men and women incarcerated from our zip code than any zip code. 37% of our families live 2.5 times beneath the poverty level. 73% of our kids in a single adult household. 35% graduation rate. So it's that population demographic that most people write off.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to make it, never going to succeed, never be productive, never contribute to society. And we just decided that's not true. Well, we didn't actually decide it, but we just decided to agree with what God has decided, that of course they can make it. And so we decided to trust them on the front end. So we've been there 22 years with that population primarily. Of course, we have volunteers and donors from all over the city, but the population that we hang out with most days is those are those that folks would call impoverished, poverty, radical, rebellious, all those kind of things. And that's where we gain our most enjoyment right now.
Mm. I like how you said that. So you gain your most enjoyment. That's kind of a great idea to think about the fact that we can actually watch transformation happen. So you've been seeing that, I guess.
We've been seeing it in radical ways. And again, I grew up in a pastor's home, been in church my whole life, for most of my life. But there's just something different for us in the way I'm wired to go into a place of absolute depravity, absolute poverty, absolute hopelessness, and to see the light come on in somebody's eyes. And for us, our little tagline at City Refuge is light, hope, and transformation. That's our goal, was to get the light to come on somebody's eyes where they've been dark and they can see that there is a way out. Then for that to transition into there's hope that not only is there light for somebody else, there's hope for me. And then we take that hope and partner that with resources and let them make that journey. We want them to feel like they're the ones making the journey to transformation, not that we're doing it for them. We're just going to walk beside them.
One of the kind of metaphors, I guess, is that with that book cover that I mentioned a moment ago, you know, armed with conviction, you know, now you're working and serving and loving in a community that's actually armed with all kinds of weapons, right? What in the world does this mean, armed with conviction? I mean, what, unpack that for us,
yeah,
Bruce. What does that mean?
You know, the way I'm wired, the way God created me is once I believe something, I pretty much believe it until it just absolute crashes and burns.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that I was wrong in that belief. And so, you know, when we moved downtown, we moved because we felt God called us to move. And if God called us to move, then he made a promise that he was going to help restore these people's lives. So I went down with the conviction that since God had set us on this path, then God was the one that was going to take care of it. And all we had to do was be obedient on that journey. And, you know, William, the best way to believe it now is I've got 20,000 stories that I could tell about the transformation that took place. So now the conviction is more than conviction. It's absolutely a belief that this will work and people's lives will be changed.
Right. That's wild, man. 20,000 stories. Now, you've got to have some favorites. Now, in your book, there's tons of those. So I am going to encourage people to go right now and buy this book. I mean, it is a fantastic book. I'm enjoying it. I haven't finished yet. I'm partway through it, and I'm really enjoying it. But let's talk about that book for just a minute and those stories. Why the book? Why the title Trust First, and why the book? I mean, so you've been doing this thing for a long time and a lot of success, and I mean, just things are going great, but unpack that book idea, and what in the world does Trust First mean?
Well, the book idea was not our idea. So we've been asked probably for half a dozen years, when are you going to write a book? And primarily people have asked that have heard me speak and heard me share the stories of triumph and failure, because there have been both. And folks just kept encouraging us to do that. It was not until actually that we met Simon Sinek, who has a great audience, obviously, mm-hmm. and is a big optimist and wanted us to tell the story. And so we had a partner that knew what they were doing and could give us a bigger platform. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, well, it's time for that. And the trust first mentality is that we don't require anything of those entering our campus or our programs on the front end. We will assume that they will do well and embrace the resources we give them until they prove otherwise. And frankly, in most environments, churches, nonprofits, government programs, you have to come in and prove yourself worthy on the front end in order to get the resources. Mm-hmm. We provide the resources on the front end, and you'll have to prove to us that you don't deserve our resources.
So let's talk about that for just a minute, because, you know, again, you talk about light, hope, and what was the third
transformation
one? Yeah, light, hope, and transformation. And this whole idea that, you know, what you're doing is basically you're building hope in people. And sometimes that's going to take a second chance, third chance, fifth chance, maybe 15 chances. Sure. I don't know. So why give so many chances to people? And when I ask you this question, it's not a redundant question, but it's really, do you ever get exhausted trying to give multiple chances to the same people? And how in the world do you keep doing that in this constant state of chaos that we're living in?
And I don't know that I have a really good answer. You know, I just know that in my own life and my own journey and my relationship with Christ, I've been given multiple chances, right? Time and again, He's forgiven me and welcomed me back into the house, right? Mm-hmm. It's so He's never kicked me out of the family. And again, Rhonda and I, my wife, we've talked over and over that so many of the individuals we have the opportunity to trust first have never been trusted in their life. They've been abused from day one. They never had an opportunity. In the book, I mentioned the fact that I was born with momentum. I had a two-parent household. I had a good church family. I went to good schools. I was born with momentum. And so many of the individuals, the majority of individuals that we meet, were not born with momentum. They were born with reverse momentum, if that's even a thing, with no opportunity unless somebody said, I'm going to give you a chance. And because you've never had a chance, I know I'm going to have to give you three or four, because you don't even know how to embrace the chance. And so we just decided that as long as grace is extended to us, we're going to extend that same grace to others, unless it becomes a risk factor that becomes too much to bear along the way.
Let's talk about that momentum principle for just a minute. So when you say you're born with momentum, right? So you have a two-parent home, you know, and you have resources. What's the responsibility of those of us that are born with momentum as it relates to those who may not be?
It's my conviction that we are all born with this innate desire to help others. And I think sometimes we cover that up with our selfish desires. And so the culture in which we live is always feeding us and wanting us to feed ourselves. And so we often move past those that weren't born with momentum. So I think it's a God-given desire to be beneficial in other people's lives. And I think it is a responsibility, and particularly to those of us that are Christians, and Scripture over and over and over shares with us that this is how we express the love of God, is by helping those who don't have what we have. And I just think it's important not to get lost in our own world sometimes and be willing to visit the world of others in an often kind of mentality.
I've heard you speak on a number of occasions, and I love this line. You know, you talk about with you and Rhonda when you landed in this zip code and you landed in west side of Atlanta, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, I think that God has conned us, right? Yep. So what was happening? You know, take us back. You had a mission to, or responsibility, I guess, to go in and maybe close a church, but all of a sudden God wanted to raise up kind of a congregation, right? What was it like at that moment to feel like that God had maybe heard all of your other dreams about pastoring in the country, you know, and watching Andy Griffith and all of the fishing and hunting and all of those things, and all of a sudden, what was it really like for you at that moment, standing on that pavement and recognizing my future is now my present?
It was a shock, frankly. I mean, we just had no intention of ever going to an inner city environment, no intention of being an overseas missionary. You know, we thought we had settled into this role of quote unquote traditional ministry and enjoyed it. And there was always a little place, there's always a little place of dissatisfaction in my life. We were doing good things and seeing good results, but I would often say to Rhonda, is this all there is? And if it is, okay, but I just always felt like there was something else. I certainly didn't feel like it was going to be in the inner city of Atlanta. And so there was a bit of shock, and then, I don't mean this in a negative term, there was a little bit of resignation that this is my call, right? So I'm just like, if I run from it, I'm never going to be satisfied. I won't know what it could have been. And living without the knowledge of what could have been, I think, was more than I could bear. And so and when I talked to Rhonda about it, she felt the same way. She said, we have to go because it's what God said we have to do. Felt completely unqualified because I was completely unqualified. No experience in the inner city other than weekend mission trips. No experience rescuing people from sex trafficking. No experience, you know, with addiction recovery and 72-hour detox, holding somebody's hand. None of that. Right? None of that. And yet here we were leading an organization that was going to do all of that. So we were supposedly the teacher, but we were very much the student on this journey for several years.
So you're a student and a teacher, obviously, you know. So let's go back to this question again on trust for just a minute, because as you were talking about that, I want to know if you'll tell us, what were some specific ways in which you and your wife, Rhonda, and your children had to trust the Lord? Here you are, moving to the inner city, unsure of anything and everything. Give us some specific moments when you had to say, you know what, I've got to trust you, Lord, here. You don't want me to fail, but what does it look like for us to trust?
Yeah, so just on a real practical level, we left a great church with a great income and all those kind of things, and they support us for 6 months, and then we were missionaries in inner city and had to raise money. So we had to trust the Lord for food and clothing and just to live on a daily basis, you know. Then we had to trust the Lord because the environment we moved in, we moved into the third floor of the 65-year-old church building. The first night we were there, a drug addict tried to steal our van and hotwired a windshield wiper motor, right? And so, but we realized we're in a tough environment. We were broken into 34 times in the 6 years we lived in that building. So we were trusting the Lord for resources. We were trusting the Lord for safety and security with all the break-ins. We were trusting the Lord for the security of our children. You know, we would bring in, I would pick up prostitutes on a street corner and bring them to our house so that they didn't have to go with their pimp. Or I would go to jail and pick them up when they were being released. And we'd bring them to our house because that's a safe, clean, warm environment. And they would literally sit at the table with my 7'5", 3-1-year-old. Homeless guys we would bring home for dinner, and they would ask if they could spend the night, and we would say yes. Right. And so and I'm not suggesting that everybody do what we did.
Sure.
But we literally, you know, Isaiah 58, we literally took into our house the homeless poor and had to trust God that nothing bad was going to happen to our kids and nothing was going to happen bad to our possessions or to our life, as the case may be.
So how have you seen that same model that you and Rhonda gave for your children? How are you seeing that now lived out in your own kids?
You know, it's a remarkable thing. When we went downtown, we had a lot of people challenge us on that because of our daughters. They said, you know, you're forcing them into an environment. They're going to resent that. We rebuked that, frankly, but then they don't resent it. And so we just decided, Rhonda's made a statement early on in our marriage, probably when our first daughter was born. She said, we're going to make loving Jesus more fun than anything else in life. And so my kids just have this, what we call it, a healthy worldview now, biblical worldview, because they were blessed to go to a private Christian school by some donors. So they would go to school with the elite and with those that were in good, safe environments, and they would come home to the drug addict or the alcoholic or the prostitute sitting at the dinner table with us. So they saw it all. So they began to understand the world's not just this little cocoon we live in. The world has this and this, polar opposites. And so now Cassie, our oldest daughter, is my executive assistant and runs all the events that happen on campus. Her husband runs our all of our IT on campus and our auto technician training program. Kelsey, our second daughter, is the executive director of House of Cherith, the anti-trafficking program. Our other two daughters have worked for us. Both of them now teach school. Our fifth daughter's here at Lee and already volunteering in opportunities to do cool ministry around the city. They've all bought into the idea of compassion is the way you live your life, and they love it.
So let's talk about for just a minute exactly what, because I know it's like a, man, there's a long list. If you've never been to the city, I have been there. You've been there. You live there, actually. But for someone who's never been there, paint us some word pictures from the moment you ride through that gate till you get to the Napa auto part store at the or auto place at the back, right? Paint a picture. What in the world goes on?
Yeah,
on this
when
campus?
You come in the front gate, you're gonna meet Anthony, who's about a 6'4" security he guard, is. Armed to the hilt, man. And so he's gonna greet you with a stern
with conviction with other
conviction.
Resources.
He's gonna make sure that you're supposed to be there. Yeah. And so once you get through security, on your right and left, two separate buildings, 210,000 square foot of space. On the right and left, as you come in, there are going to be residential programs for mothers with children and single women that are experiencing homelessness, so about 220 beds, 180-day program with medical, mental health, dental, vision, parenting, vocational training, financial literacy. You'll pass that, and you'll come to the Recuperative Care Center, where 14 rooms are set up with medical care for women that are homeless that are experiencing medical issues and need to be monitored, 24-hour medical staff for them, private Christian school. In the building on your right with a daycare connected to that. So we serve children from 6 weeks of age through 12th grade on campus from poverty, food desert environments. You'll pass the medical clinic, 10,000 square feet with six medical exam rooms, two dental units, a vision unit, mental health component. Our commercial kitchen will be on your left, served 350,000 meals last year to those in crisis. So we serve three meals a day every day of the year. Phenomenal program. The Workforce Innovation Hub. We'll be next on your left, and we do training in auto technician, culinary arts, CNA, tech academy, hospitality, customer service, landscape, all kind of put over 700 people to work in the last 18 months. Then the House of Cherith will be on campus, three housing units there for 38 women that are survivors of trafficking exploitation. The auto technician program you referenced, the big garage in the back mm-hmm. where cars are in and out of, where we will graduate class number 10 on October 20th with 15 students and 100% employment placement out of all 10 classes. And then our real estate investment team and all of that's on the last building on the left. And that's around community revitalization. We're in construction on 47 apartments across the street mm-hmm. right now to provide affordable housing to the community. So it's what we call, some people call it a ministry mall. We call it a one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. And so if you get here and you're in crisis, probably what you need is on this campus.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, Bruce, that's a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of people. How do you personally, let's talk about Bruce Deal personally for just a minute. How do you personally stay in tune? You reference the Holy Spirit in your chapel. You reference the Holy Spirit about every time I've had a conversation with you. You have a relationship with Him and God and Jesus and all of that, right? How do you personally stay plugged in? What disciplines have you had to develop in your life as this thing has unpacked now into a massive, massive organization, right? Reaching thousands of people and you know, hundreds of people depending on your vision and your expertise and your commitment. How do you personally make this work? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. There are four things I started teaching about 20 years ago in January of every year. I teach our staff and our church about the four pillars of life. I call it faith, family, fitness, and finance. And so I just work really hard at keeping my relationship with God intimate and intense and a deep relationship. Then my family comes second. And then I want to make sure that I take good care of my body, stay in good shape and work out. And then the finance part, not having any financial debt in my life. So those four things, if I keep those four things in order, I'm pretty good to go. As the organization has grown, that's been a bit more of a challenge to stay connected on the ground. I got on a plane flying home from Cincinnati speaking a few years ago, and we'd had a great time that weekend. I'd spoken six times, but as I sat on a plane, I realized I didn't have a yesterday story. Mm. I had a ton of stories, but most of them were in the past somewhere.
Wow.
And so I went back and I told my team, I said, by the way, you know, you guys have wanted me to be a CEO up here at the 30,000 foot view level. I have to have a yesterday story. And so now I'm very intentional about knowing at least half a dozen, 10, 12 stories of the people living on campus, checking on them, finding out how they're doing, knowing their names. That's what keeps me grounded, is the rawness of the stories, not just the bigness of the organization.
Mm-hmm. So over 22 years, the past 22 years, what has been the single most, if you can identify one, impact on your life as a result of the City of Refuge?
I think the single greatest impact is I've changed the way I look at the world in general, and I've changed the way I look at the church.
Mm.
You know, I've just decided after my 22 years that we're all sons and daughters of God. Mm. There are a lot of folks that just haven't been introduced to our Father yet, and that no matter where they've been or what they've done, they still are of value and of dignity, mm-hmm. and there's never a case that you write off. And I've decided that it is the role of the church to live out Isaiah 58 and Micah 6:8 and Matthew 25. It's just our role. It's our life. It's our expression. And so I've settled in that. I'm not angry about anything. I'm not frustrated with anybody. I'm just like, this is a good place for me. This is what I believe the kingdom looks like, and I'm going to live that out. Mm. And those that want to join us on that journey, we'll be more than glad to have them come along.
Mm. That's awesome. Today in chapel, you gave four kind of points about obedience. Let me recount those. Actually, we'll have the chapel link in the show notes for anybody who wants to watch it. But, you know, obedience always has risk. Always has rewards, little routine, and the key is to bring about restoration, right? You talk about the Holy Spirit, and in the opening chapter of your book, Trust First, you give this story of this idea of your hand on the hand of, I think, Gloria, right? Putting gentle pressure as she had her pistol facing, you know, getting ready to shoot someone.
Right.
What is this gentle pressure you talk about? Unpack that for someone who maybe doesn't have the relationship with the Lord that you have. Maybe they don't understand the jargon of Christianity, but they're feeling something in a gentle pressure in their own life about how they're living. Take a moment or two and really take a minute and just kind of tell us, what does that really mean, Bruce?
Sure, sure. Well, thank you for the opportunity to share about that specifically. Those of us that do have a Christian background, or at least a religious background, we often lived under condemnation. So we did something wrong, we knew it was wrong, and somebody told us it was wrong, right? And we often took that and translated that into our relationship with God. So when we came to a relationship with Christ, when we did something wrong, we would feel this condemnation. Well, I moved out of that to this place of conviction, which again is, you know, religious terminology, but for me, it's more of when I start to say something or do something or engage in something that's not God's plan for my life, I just feel a check in my spirit, a check in my heart. It's like your mind says, is this really what you want to do? Is this really the right thing to do? That's the gentle pressure I talk about. And I think all of us, regardless of whether or not we are quote-unquote believers or not, when we start to make a moral decision, there's always a little pressure from somewhere that's saying no. And we often have to override that pressure in order to say yes and do the wrong thing. And I just think it's important to submit to the gentle pressure. I think that's a guide, a moral compass for us. I think it's turning us back to the right decision and the right words and the right action to submit to that. And if we're not careful, I know for me, I can get so busy and so caught up in life in general that I can just suppress the gentle pressure because I've got so much. I got to raise X number of million of dollars. I got to take care of X number of staff. I got to house X number of people. If I'm not careful, I can let the weight of that override the gentle pressure of the Spirit is trying to get me just to say the right thing to this one individual. It's not about the big thing. It's about the multiple little things that result in the big thing.
So this gentle pressure isn't just something that happens one time. Usually it happens multiple times, and sometimes multiple times a day. So what are some disciplines that we can put in our life to first be able to recognize that pressure, and number two, to appropriately respond to it?
Sure. Three things I try to do and try to teach my team to do. Number one is to experience quietness every day. Multiple times a day, but certainly set a quiet time where I just block out everything and just try to hear clearly my own heart and the heart of the Father. Secondly, during that quiet time is to focus, right? Focus on what I'm hearing, focus on my decisions, focus on what the agenda is for the day. Sometimes we go quiet, but if we're not focused, then it's sort of a reprieve, but there's nothing productive that comes out of it. And then the third thing is simplicity. And so for me, we have often complicated life, and particularly life in the kingdom. And it's simple as love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And so as long as we have this simplistic approach, so if I'm quiet, if I focus on the things before me and I take a simple approach, when that gentle pressure comes, it's pretty easy to recognize. There's not a lot of chaos and noise around me. I can feel that pressure and sense that something's going on.
Mm-hmm. Man, it seems like you've really kind of lived that balanced life. I'm sure there's moments when it wasn't always balanced, you know, and probably the challenge for all of us in the days ahead would be, how do we face it? But in the latter part of your book, which I haven't finished your book, but in the latter part of the book, you talk about your dad, you talk about your hero, you talk about his passing, you talk about the day you had to carry him, and he takes his hand and he pats you on the head and he said to you, "Son, I'm glad you could carry me." Mm-hmm. What? Tell us about that, and how does that apply to us?
You know, it's my dad was just an incredible man. He just loved others. He loved his family. He was sacrificial to the last day of his life. And for me to have the privilege of carrying him when he couldn't walk is not really, can't be put into words, because he carried me so much in my life,
sure.
Not only physically, but emotionally and spiritually, set such a model for me in his relationship with my mom and the way he raised myself, my brothers and my sister. And so for him to say, thank you for carrying me, with just words that made me feel like life was valuable and that I had accomplished mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. And it is a picture, I think, of our Heavenly Father, mm-hmm. right? He carries us so many times in our own brokenness and our own weariness. And I think his desire for us is not then to carry him, but for us to carry others mm-hmm. to him mm-hmm. that can't get there on their own. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing I gained from my dad. You know, he finished his life well. I want to finish my journey well. And I think the way I do that best is by carrying on his legacy, by carrying the broken to the one that can fix the broken, mm-hmm. carrying the weary to the one that can bring rest. And so I think it's my responsibility, as long as I have the ability, is to continue to carry, not my father since he's gone, but to carry all those that God brings into my life mm-hmm. and bring them to the one that can heal them.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously with 20,000 stories plus, that's happening. Bruce, we're about to close, but before we do, what encouragement do you have for that pastor who's in a zip code that's really struggling, for that person who's beginning to feel that gentle pressure, but it actually scares them because they don't have community and they don't have someone who's trusting them, for that leader who somehow has missed their balance and they need quietness, but they can't seem to get it into their schedule. I don't know, just for the people that are listening, what you've got real discernment in your heart, what closing challenge and encouragement would you offer to our listeners today on how they can continue this life of obedience to the Lord?
Yeah, two words come to mind. Priority. You know, what should be, not necessarily what is, because we often get it skewed, but what should be the priority in our life, and what should take the place of value in our life? You know, and to that pastor that's struggling, sometimes the priority seems to be keeping the elders happy or making sure the congregation's happy or the reputation of the church in the community. Well, that's not really the priority, mm. and that's not really going to produce the greatest value mm. down the road. So looking around and evaluating what is the most important thing in my life, important things in my life, and what am I doing that's bringing value to the kingdom, value to my community, value to my family. And when I have those conversations with individuals, I've had to have them with myself, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been days when my priorities were completely screwed up. There have been mm-hmm. days when my value system was wrong. But when I have those conversations with those that I mentor, it's often good things that get in the way of the best thing, mm-hmm. right? And they're not living outside of God's plan for their life. They're just not deeply invested in the one thing he's called them to do. And so I would encourage those that might be feeling some sort of gentle pressure, submit yourself to the pressure and see where it takes you. Don't be afraid of the pressure. Don't run from the pressure. Don't ignore the pressure. The Father's not going to, he's not going to pull the pressure away just because we don't give in to it. Mm. There's something he wants to do in us and through us as a result of the pressure. So submit yourself to that and see where it takes you. Mm.
Great, man. So if somebody wants to get the book, where can they find it? I guess anywhere that books are sold?
Well, most places books are sold. And yeah. The easiest place, obviously, you can get it tomorrow is on Amazon.
There you
so
go.
So if you just type in Trust First or Bruce Deal, it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. And you can order from there and be reading tomorrow.
There you go. Someone wants to get in contact with you or City of Refuge. How do they reach you guys?
CityRefugeATL.org. If you just Google City Refuge Atlanta, we'll pop up first. But the website is ATL.org. And City of Refuge ATL is our hashtag, is our name for Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as well, so they can mm-hmm. take a look there.
Great. And let's say a student wants to connect with you, because I know you have internships, right?
Right.
We're interviewing Kelsey and one of our students, Micah Shepherd, who actually interned over the summer, coming up on another episode. But let's say students want to connect with you and serve down at City of Refuge. How do they
yep.
make that same request?
The
same
website,
email?
When they click on a website, there's a orange box that says volunteer. They just click on that, fill out a little brief questionnaire, and then the volunteer coordinator reaches back to them. They can come for a weekend, come for summer internships, spend a week with us. Incredible number of opportunities for folks to come be a part of what's going on.
And if donors want to help take that pressure off of you to raise millions of dollars a minute, they'll be able to reach that click as well.
Absolutely. Donate's the biggest button on the front page.
Bruce, I know you're busy, and I thank you for taking time to visit with us today on ServeCast. And, man, we really just champion what you're doing and appreciate you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for what you're doing with the podcast and for the opportunity to be a part of it.
You got it. Hey, guys, as always, you've heard it, and you'll hear it again. We're made for more. Be sure to make a difference in someone else's life and let your life impact someone else for the good. I think we'll put another Lee U worship tune on this one so you can kind of think about it. So as you're listening to this song today at the close of this podcast, kind of revisit what this conversation with Bruce was about. And as that gentle pressure of the Holy Spirit might be touching down on your life, just simply say, yes, I think you can trust the Lord because he's proven over and over and over that he's faithful. Have a great day.
start with me. I want to be